Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys in our day lives, but for this show, we bring you this show to answer your questions on any legal subject. Any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys. What's on your mind today? 303-713-8255. 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Welcome to all of our stations. Welcome to all our listeners. And so you're in an automobile accident, and so you're going to talk to the insurance adjuster for the very first time. Either they're going to call you, he or she's going to call you, or you're going to call them. And this is the insurance adjuster for the insurance company, for the at-fault party, the one that rear-ended you, that T-boned you, that put you off into the emergency room or to urgent care, or you went home and you went to the doctor the next day. That person is going to speak to you. And what are you going to do? Do you know what to do? How to do it? What if they say to you, we'd like to take your recorded statement. Do you mind? And what if they say, we can't adjust your claim. You expect us to adjust your claim if you don't fill out a few forms. We're going to send you a quote, a few forms, end quote. Do you sign them? Part of those forms include medical releases for all your records, for all your doctors. Do you have to do that? Have you ever heard of the case of Alcon versus Spicer? You have rights and protection. You need to know how to address the insurance adjuster. And Brad, let's just cover just a little bit. When they send you these few forms, they usually send you a questionnaire. All these doctors, they usually send you medical releases. Should you sign these? What do you need to do? What do you need to know?
Well, the first thing you do is don't sign them and don't send them back. You do not want to give the adjuster open access to all your medical records to be able to do whatever they want with your medical records. And to get whatever medical records they want, to be able to republish them, to be able to put them in any kind of a index or bureau, to be able to pass your medical information around to everybody. You do not want the adjusters being able to get all your medical information from whatever source they want. They should be just getting the medical information as it relates to your injuries, and it should be very limited. As far as giving statements, you do not want to be giving statements in the forms there of having you fill out. You want to be very careful with those forms, because as you start filling out those forms, you're putting yourself in irreversible situations, and sometimes what you're writing may not be exactly correct. You're still trying to relive and review and get some kind of understanding on the accident itself. A lot of times you're hurt, a lot of times you're shook up. You need some time to be able to figure out what you're saying. And, the best advice is you need somebody to help you with that.
Well, what happens when they say, you can't expect us to pay you for your car unless we know what happened. We need you to tell us what happened. I mean, what about that part?
Well, you can tell them that, a lot of times you say you can get the police report. A lot of times you can tell them just some basics about the accident. I wouldn't give a whole lot of details. When they say they want to take a recorded statement, I wouldn't do it. And until you have a chance to talk to counsel. And one of the things you really want to do is say, well, what did your insurer tell you? It's reported. If you call most adjusters, you call most insurance companies, say one of your insurers ran into me, one of your insurers hit me, one of your insurers caused an accident, the first things they'll tell you is if they haven't heard from their insured, they're not going to talk to you. If it hasn't been reported by their insured, they're not going to talk to you. So what are you looking at? You're looking at saying, okay, if they're willing to talk to you, that means they've talked to their insured. If they've talked to their insured, ask them, well, what'd your insured tell you? And find out what they said. A lot of times their insured's already admitted the accident, but adjusters don't necessarily accept that. A lot of times the insured will say, yeah, I caused the accident, I did it. But the adjusters want to hear something from you. If they can slip you up, if they can cause you to say something that they can say is not entirely their own insured's fault, they're going to use it against you.
And when they're talking to you, if you ask them for their insureds, that's the person who hits you. They're insured. That's our lingo. That's the law lingo. They're insured. The insurance company's insured. If they've already talked to their insured, they took a statement from them. And they're getting pretty tricky these days about these statements, because they already know what happened. And then they say, well, we need to know from you what happened. Well, then ask them for a copy of the statement from their insured. Ask them what the at-fault driver said happened. They're not going to tell you. They're not going to give you a copy of the statement. They're not going to tell you. They want to know, and why do they only want to hear from you? Why do they, quote, deem it necessary, end quote, that they have to take your statement first? Why? Because, and why are they not going to give you the statement from the person who hits you? Why? You need to ask those questions. You're not obligated to give a statement. You're not obligated to fill out all their questionnaires. You're not obligated to fill out their forms, but you better know what you're doing. And, you know, if you go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, there's a button there you can hit, and it tells you, it's a 30-minute show Brad and I did on this very subject, what you need to know exactly before you talk to the insurance adjuster for the very first time. This is a Law Talk show. We're going to talk to Jesse. Good morning, Jesse. Welcome to Bell & Pollock.
Yes, I was curious. I got a small business.
Yeah.
And we got a call from the state's attorney general office, and they asked me a bunch of questions. Do they ever do that?
Wait a minute.
Whoa.
This sounds very strange. What'd they ask you?
Why are they calling you?
Yeah.
They asked me why I use a contract and why I was suing the guy for $1,100.
What?
And who served them.
So you sued somebody, you did business with them, and then you sued him? Is that what happened, Jesse?
Yes.
And so the attorney general of the state of Colorado or one of the assistant attorney generals called you up and were asking you questions about this?
Yeah, that's who he claimed to be. It was from the state's attorney general office.
Did you get a name or anything?
Yeah, but I didn't have a chance to write it down.
Okay, wait a minute. How are they involved? Why would the attorney general's office get involved?
I guess the former client called them about something.
But what was your, and without giving a lot of detail, generally, what was your case about? What was going on?
They have a lawn service, supposed to be every other week, and I talked to him about going to every week. He said, I thought he approved it, and then he said every other week, and so I thought I was supposed to return on a certain date, which was like 3 weeks, and he was actually expecting me in 2 weeks.
Okay, so you got a dispute about how many times you were supposed to perform lawn service, basically?
Yes.
Okay, and the attorney general is calling you?
He claimed to be from the attorney general, and it was their phone number, but, you know, somebody can get it on an iPad and bring up pretty much any number they want and make a call from that number.
Well, okay, you know, the attorney general has a right to investigate certain matters, but, I mean, this is basically a civil dispute.
Yeah.
And, you know, there can be consumer fraud, and that is a function of the attorney general. But, Brad, what's your take on that?
This doesn't sound like anything the attorney general would be involved in. And the questions they're asking, you know, why are you suing and what's this? You know, look at the complaint. You know, look at the lawsuit. And you don't have to be divulging your lawsuit to the attorney general and the content of your lawsuit for any reason whatsoever that I can think of on a civil claim. This sounds like to me like a fraud all the way around.
You know, the attorney general operates in an upstanding manner, and it's that like that old scam with the IRS. The IRS never calls you and asks you for your Social Security number on the phone, etc. They don't do that kind of stuff. I mean, obviously, they have the right to audit, and the AG has the right to investigate consumer fraud cases, etc. Misuse and abuse of consumers. However, you know, a good tip for everybody listening in is if you get a call, you know, we're from the attorney general's office, tell them, okay, you take your name, you don't need to answer the questions, I'll be glad to talk to you, and then you hang up, and I'll call you back, give me your phone number, and then you call back to the attorney general's office and try to verify it that way. This sounds very strange to me.
Yeah, I would not be talking to these people, and I would not deal with it. If you want us to help you, stay online, give us your name and number, and we'll call the attorney general's office before you get to the bottom of it.
And Jesse, we'll be glad to do that.
Okay.
All right, so you hang on, and we'll get your information, and we'll give a call to the attorney general. We'll see what's going on for you, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. And don't forget about our free books. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and download our free books, any of them. One of them is called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. We had some of those in the past few days. How unfortunate, how drastic, how abusive, and they are cowards of the street when they injure somebody and leave. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We've been helping injured victims for over 35 years. We got a legal game plan. You get it free when you come to see us, and we pack our experience into that legal game plan for you, for your loved ones, for your family. But for this show, we're right here for you on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. If you wonder where we have offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, and Steamboat Springs. And we do cases all over the state of Colorado. You can call us right now if you'd like. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. And I was talking about our book before the break called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. It tells you everything you need to know about a hit and run accident. You wake up one morning, and that afternoon, that morning, you're hit by a driver that takes off. And it also applies if you're hit by a driver that doesn't have any insurance. I'm sorry, I don't have an insurance card. Or worse yet, we see it all the time. They hand you an insurance card. You go call their insurance company, and they say, that policy expired 7 months ago. Sorry, there's no insurance. What do you do? What do you do when the rain sets in? You read our book. You get your UIM coverage. That's what you do. And if you have any questions, you can call us at any time. You know, we were talking about the first phone call to an adjuster. Either the adjuster makes to you or that you make to them. You need to know what you're doing. You need to know what to do before you make the call, before the call happens, about property damage, about personal injury, about releases, about questionnaires, about, you know, some of these releases we looked at, they send you in the middle of the release all this fancy legal beagle information and words in the middle of the release. They say, you give authorization for us, the insurance company, are you ready to redisclose without penalty? You redisclose all your health insurance information to any insurance company or database that we deem proper. How do you like that? You give them permission to do that. And when you do it, they do it. There's a database called ISO, okay? And there's other databases, but this was a secret database for years. And, you know, Brad, you need to know what you're doing before you sign these releases. And then they always say, well, we need to know about your health insurance information. And so, yeah, that's true at the appropriate time and in the appropriate way.
Yeah, and the thing is when they start asking those type of questions, they're getting to the point where they're investigating the claim. And normally they want it to be one-way street. As far as the health insurance, maybe sometime way down the road they're going to be able to talk about health insurance. But basically, no, they don't get health insurance. And when they ask questions concerning that, and you for sure don't give them releases to get information from your health insurance. A lot of times you don't even really have to give them the health insurance to begin with. What you do is tell them your insured caused it. What I want to know is your insurance. I want to know what your insured's policy limits are. I want to know what you're going to do is about starting to pay my bills. And what they're going to tell you right out is, and straight up front, is they're not going to pay any of your bills. If they're honest with you, they're going to tell you they're not going to pay any of your bills for any injury, for any medical care, until the entire case is finished. So, you know, you better get yourself ready to take care of yourself and to get yourself cared for during the time period that you're waiting to get this claim adjusted. Now, what they will do a lot of times is they try and get information that tells them if you're in a state of weakness, and that can be weakness. Do you have health insurance? No, I don't have the health insurance. Now they know you may be in a self-pay mode. And if you're in a self-pay mode, you could be having a lot of trouble, and they know you're having a lot of trouble with being able to pay your bills. So they'll try to they'll try and dangle a potential settlement, which normally is very low. Normally very low. Then they'll try and dangle the settlement in front of you that is going to make you feel, well, at least I'm getting my bills paid. At least I'll be able to get my medical care. I'll be able to get the help I need. And they're going to take advantage of the situation.
Yeah, you know, another thing that we see all the time that's very, very important is people talk to the insurance company on their very first call or subsequent calls, and the adjuster asks them, what are your injuries? You know, were you injured? Yes, I was. Well, what are your injuries? And what body parts did you injure? A lot of people, they say, well, something like, well, my neck hurts. I went to the doctor, my neck. They don't know how important it is that you describe if you're going to answer the question, which you ought to do it in the right way, at the right time, and follow what we say. But if you're going to answer the question, a lot of people say, well, I just thought I'd tell them about my neck. I didn't think I'd tell them about my low back. I didn't think I'd tell them about my hip. So they later say, well, we interviewed you and we asked you, how were you injured? And you only told us about your neck. You didn't tell us about your left ankle. You didn't tell us that you broke a knee. You didn't tell us about the fact that you had a scope or an MRI on your knee. You didn't tell us that. And you thought, well, it wasn't important. I was just telling them some general, we were just having a general conversation. And they said, no, it's right here. It's right here. And so you didn't tell us about that. So you must not be injured. So now you're being inconsistent. Now you're a poor medical historian. Now you don't even know your own history. Now you're not being truthful. Now they imply that you're not telling the truth. And that's a big one. That's a huge one. You need to be careful. You know, you can solve this problem. This problem is solvable. But to solve it, you have to go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You know, bottom line, there's case law and statutory law in this state that help you, that explain your rights. I mean, I'll guarantee you, most of you don't know when you're talking to the insurance adjuster what your rights are under Alcon versus Spicer, what your rights are under Weil versus Dillon, what your rights are under the McLaughlin case. You need to know in English language, not legalese. You need to know when you talk to the insurance adjuster. The first time or the second time or the 100th time, don't care. You need to have an understanding. And then there are questions. You know, we always say that there's questions you can ask the insurance adjuster. You said one a minute ago, well, what did you take a statement from the at-fault driver? You know they did. But now they're getting pretty tricky the way they take statements, because in the old days, they used to record the statement from their insured, which is the at-fault driver, which recorded it, which put it down in black and white, and then transcribed the recording. Now what they do is they don't record it so much anymore. The insured, the at-fault driver, tells them what happens, and they just type it into their notes. And we've seen some inconsistencies the way they type it into the notes versus what actually happened. So, I mean, you need to pay attention to this.
And the thing is that if they're insured, you know, and you say, did your insured tell you they ran the stop sign? Did your insured tell you they ran into the back of me? And they say, yeah. I say, well, why? What did your insured tell you was the reason? What were they doing? Yeah, all of a sudden you'll find the adjuster not talking to you. And you'll say, well, why aren't you talking to me? Why do I have to give you my description of the accident if your insured has already told you that he or she ran the stop sign and ran into me, or that he or she already ran into the back of me, already rear-ended me, and they said it's their fault? Why do you need any more from me other than to know the damage to my car and how you're going to fix it, and to know what my injuries are and how we're going to get them taken care of?
When you ask the adjuster questions and they don't answer you, there is your answer.
Then you know it's time to get a lawyer.
Right. There's your answer. Well, they won't give you the question. They won't tell you what the insurance coverages are. They won't tell you the policy limits. They won't tell you what the statement was of the driver who hit you. Hello, you're going to have to understand this is war, and they're trying to gain the advantage of the war off the start. And so you need to know what to do. Another thing, Brad, we just have these slew of these hit and runs and slew of these very, very tragic incidents all over the state of Colorado. You know, drunk drivers, texting drivers. Drivers not paying attention, no insurance, uninsured, leaving the scene, hit and run, cowards of the street. Let's just talk a second. It's an entirely different, we have what we call a legal game plan. But you need a legal game plan when you get it with Bell and Pollock in your first consultation. But we have a legal game plan. If it's a drunk driver, that's a different legal game plan. Believe me, if it's a texting driver, different legal game plan. What about a driver, Brad, that has... that's impaired from prescription medication?
Well, you're going to have the same situation. You know, they don't call it necessarily drunk driving. They call it driving while impaired. And that's what we're concerned about. Yes, there's limitations for drunk driving, and we have ways to test alcohol, driving with excessive amounts of alcohol in your system. But we call it driving while impaired because the question is, are you impaired with regard to any drug, whether it be a legal drug, whether it be a prescription drug, whether it be an illegal drug? All these have to be looked into. And you want them looked into because sometimes people are abusing it. Sometimes they know better. When they get that little bottle that says, do not operate a motor vehicle or do not drive while taking this medication, they shouldn't be driving. And there's no reason for them not to be driving. There's no reason for them not to heed that warning and make arrangements to make sure they're going to make the public safe.
Right, and you have to pay attention to this. You have to know what's happening and what their game plan is. You need your own legal game plan. You can get a legal game plan with Bell and Pollock. All you have to do is go to our website or call us or come in and see us. But what we're trying to tell you is this is war. You need a legal game plan for the liability, meaning who was at fault and what happened, and you need a legal game plan for your injuries. Do you understand? If you're going to need neck surgery, that's a different legal game plan. If you're going to need back surgery, or if you're going to need an MRI, or if you've had a TBI, a traumatic brain injury, or if you've had a what they call a whiplash, if you've got soft tissue injury, that can be very debilitating. Different legal game plan. How do you know what to do? Bell and Pollock, champions of the people. We'll be right back. Here we go, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. This is a law talk show, not a political show, the only show of its kind. Telephone number 303-713-8255. We are injury attorneys in our day lives right here on the radio. We're here for you to answer your questions on any legal subject. What's on your mind? Right now, joining us live is Eric from Caitlin's Restaurant. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Well, Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Listen, we're on our last week of these specials. Now, our breakfast special for this upcoming week is going to be the pork tips and the eggs. You get the smoked pork tips. You get two eggs of your choice, cooked however you like. You get the golden brown hash browns, and you get a choice of toast, tortilla, or pancakes. I recommend the pancakes, by the way. They're scratch-made buttermilk. I would go with that. And the lunch special is a wedge salad. It's iceberg lettuce with bacon bits, blue cheese crumbles, and diced tomatoes. Dressing of your choice. Really, really good stuff. Those are our specials for one more week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It's only $7.99. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. Can't beat that. And I know the weather's a little suspect, but if we have a chance, we will get the umbrellas up. We definitely have the flat screens on, and we definitely have the bottomless mimosas for $10. So that should be enough incentive, if not, to get you down here. Come on down to Caitlin's, hang out with us. We'd love to see you. Have a good crew. Have a good time. Have good food.
Eric.
Yes.
What about my green and red pancakes, man?
Okay.
Did you forget about those?
Those are going to be next week's breakfast special. We're going to run those, and I'll go ahead and leak that out now. Those are peppermint pancakes. Now, don't knock it before you try it. It sounds kind of crazy, but it's really, really good. It's really, really good. With maple syrup, you can't beat it. It's peppermint pancakes. That's going to be the breakfast special next week. Haven't quite come up with the lunch one, but next week, I guarantee you I'll have it for you.
And they're going to be red and green.
They're going to be red and green. They're swirled in. It's really, really good.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
All right, Eric, where are you located?
All right, 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's the Glendale Shopping Center, guys.
Okay, Feliz Navidad and adios.
You got it, adios.
All right, our telephone number, 303-713-8255 in the mountains, 970-457-1009. You know, we've been covering, and we've covered on our website, what do you do before the first phone call to the adjuster? You need to know. If you have any questions or any confusion, you can just call us every day, any day, and we'll answer your questions. People called us last week just to ask insurance questions about what kind of car insurance they should buy. They were confused. That's what we do. We're glad to do it. 303-713-8255. Right now, join us live, KHOW, is Mike. Good morning, Mike from Westminster. What can we do for you?
I have a quick question. First of all, I really enjoy your program, guys.
Thank you very much.
Regarding unemployment,
right?
I am about ready to quit my job due to the fact that the vehicle the company is giving me is unsafe. They daily ride it up as doesn't belong on the road, and it takes them forever to fix it. And by the time they do that, something else has gone wrong. So it's a It's a chronic situation where it's never safe. And if I were to quit, would I be eligible for unemployment? Because, I mean, the vehicle does not belong on the road.
Okay, the general rule, Mike, is that when you quit your employment, and you weren't fired, and so it affects basically, with a couple of exceptions, eliminates your unemployment status and your unemployment claim. However, when you are operating in a situation where it's unsafe, then that is a factor. There's no guarantee. That's a factor that's taken into consideration with regard to your claim.
Right. Under a situation like this, if you quit your job and you want to be eligible for unemployment, you're going to have to get yourself a pretty good record of why you quit and show that you quit for cause, that there's a reason It was justified that you weren't working, okay? For instance, you could easily identify this, believe it or not, as a hostile work environment. It doesn't fit 100% into it, but can be a hostile work environment. It can be because of safety considerations. There can be reasons that you're not working there because of the conditions that you're being put into, where really you're not voluntarily quitting your job. You're quitting your job because it's an unsafe environment. They fail to
what I do have, however, are the daily Department of Transportation logbooks, which is mandatory that you fill out. I've got them for the entire last year, which is a document that will prove this, because the supervisor gets one, the mechanics get one, and I get one. And so pretty much it's documented in writing. And I understand, as far as unemployment goes, it's to no fault of my own.
Right, Mike. It's almost like a constructive discharge, okay?
Right.
And Brad said hostile work environment. They all revolve around the same concept, is that you really didn't want to quit, but you were forced to quit because of these conditions. And I think you just answered the golden question, because let's say you were the judge and I said, well, I had to quit. Mr. Mike, Judge, I had to quit because I had to operate this unsafe equipment, etc. And the judge, you would say, well, what do you have to show me? And I think you just answered the question. You got a lot of documentation, right?
Correct.
That documentation is going to be essential, because the guidelines for being able to collect unemployment is going to have to show that you left your job through no fault of your own. And when we're talking about you leaving your job through no fault of your own, we're talking about the fact that you're leaving your job because of, once again, the danger that and the failure of them to follow the necessary rules and regulations to give you.
Here's what will happen is that they'll go ahead and fix the truck, which, like I said, is a chronic problem of things going wrong with it. Now you can come back to work. We fixed the problem. Well, then that's not going to do it, because again, you can show the history for a year of things consistently going wrong with this vehicle. I can refuse to drive the vehicle. Hey, you may have fixed it, but hey, it's not going to stay fixed.
Well, the other thing is, Mike, is that, you know, if I were the judge listening to your pitch and your position that you were basically forced out of this, I'd be asking where the documentation is. You've got that. We covered that. But I'd also be asking the question, wait a minute, was this unsafe situation, was that a peripheral part of your job, or was it the major part of your job? And what would you say? Would you say it's the major part? It is your job. That's what your job is.
Right. Exactly. That's the major part of my job.
Okay. So I mean, we can't say, well, you couldn't do this for 10 minutes a day, but that doesn't apply to the other 7 hours, etc. So
right.
It's a major part of your job. You've got it well documented. I think you're on your road. If you,
right.
And I think if you're going to do this, you need to craft a letter, basically, of resignation, or an email of resignation that's in crafted with the right words. We'll be glad to help you on that.
Yeah, it's because you want to structure it as a hazardous working environment or hazardous working conditions.
Well, it is a CDL situation.
Right.
And if I were to get in an accident, someone else, the other person got hurt, I'm in deep doo-doo.
Yeah. Well, no, it'd be worse than that, Mike. I'll tell you what, if you had a couple of guys like us after you because you did that and after your company, we would say to you something like, well, did you drive this truck? Yeah. How often did you drive this truck? Every day I had this vehicle. Did you understand it was unsafe? You must have understood it was unsafe because you reported it 9,000 times. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, the minute you're able to show a hazardous working condition or environment, you're going to be okay for your unemployment. So I do think we want to help you with putting it together. And
that would be terrific.
But when Brad says it's okay, it's going to be a fight. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's not a slam dunk situation, but we'll be glad to do that.
Hearing over it, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, we're going to put you on hold. If you give your information, we'll help you craft what you need to in writing.
Great, guys. Thank you very much.
Mike, thank you for the call.
Happy holidays.
So happy holidays to you. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. That was a great question by Mike. Join us live now is Steve from Windsor, Colorado. Good morning, Steve.
Yes, sir.
You got some sad events up in Windsor this weekend, right?
Yeah, you do.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, so sorry about that for that community. What can we do for you, sir?
Well,
I have a colonoscopy done the 28th of July at Cheyenne VA, and the doctor is registered in Denver, out of Denver, and his office is in Fort Collins, Colorado, and he's a contracted doctor to the VA. And I'm 100% disabled Vietnam veteran going in, and this was my third colonoscopy, and he botched it, and meaning I got a hole through my bowel, it went into my colon, and I got sepsis within 4 days, and I was rushed to emergency, literally dying as per two other doctors. And I got a colostomy bag all summer long, or the rest of the summer. I just got it reversed, luckily, and I'm still dealing with an abscess where the poison went on my rear end. And it's just, I'm just now kind of starting to put my ducks in a row to get people to listen to me. And it's, this is totally, totally documented from day one and myself. Third day in the hospital, I started writing down everything. I was sent to a nursing home that I read the chart before I even went in from two doctors what they were supposed to do. They did absolutely nothing in 9 days, and I demanded to get out of that, and I got out of there and got home care, which was a nurse, and they've been the best, Caring Hearts Nursing Agency, on a daily basis, and we're happening to go back to them for this abscess, and hopefully next week I'll be getting them back in. This has been going on for 4 months, and
Steve, we got a break coming up. Can you hang with us after the break?
Absolutely.
But wait, I got a couple of questions for you before we go to break. When was this procedure? What day?
July 28th of 2016.
Okay, you got some complicated issues like the Federal Tort Claims Act, the status of the doctor, government doctor versus private doctor, and when they puncture your bowel. They always say, well, it's just usual acceptable risk. That was just an acceptable risk for you. So sorry about that. We're going to catch you on the other side of the break. Hang with us, Steve.
Thank you very much.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. We've been in business for over 35 years, helping injured victims put their lives back together again. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. And don't forget about the show that follows us, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, if you got questions on real estate, contracts, got some questions on HVAC, inspections, what you need to do in a real estate situation, they're the pros. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. This is the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. Our books, Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, Once in the Accident, and Again on the Insurance Claim. Second book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, is packed with insurance information you need to know now, right now, today. And the definitive guideline on workers' compensation injuries in Colorado, they're all free. You can download them on our website, championsofthepeople.com. Or if you want a hard copy, and if you want my personal declaration sheet for my own car insurance, we'll be glad to give it. All you have to do is call here or call our law firm. Right before the break, we were talking to Steve from Windsor, Colorado, about a medical malpractice thing. He got his bowel punctured. He had sepsis. He had problems with that. So, Steve, you with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so... just to start off, you probably fall under the auspices and under what's called the Federal Tort Claims Act, and it depends on the status of the doctor. If it's a government doctor or government entity, becomes complicated. That's what happens there, and Brad's going to cover a little bit about this Federal Tort Claims Act because we're really worried during the break about your time limits.
Yeah, I think you're probably safe on the time limits right now, but we got to get on it. I don't want it to any more time going by. We're probably going to want to talk to you after the show we're on this week to discuss.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, doing the right things for
anything to lead me in the right direction. I have a 12th grade education. I believe I'm versed, but then again, I'm dealing with the federal government, and this has gone on way too long in the sense. It's only from July, but I'm still dealing with this.
Yeah, it starts out with filing a standard form 95 that has to be filed. And we've got to get that filed, and then we've got certain time periods that are going to start applying after we file the Form 95. That's the equivalent administrative claim that's being filed. The VA will have up to 6 months to review and investigate the claim. It can then either accept the claim and pay it out, or it can settle, or it can reject the claim. So we've got to get going on it. You do have 2 years from discovering the malpractice or your injury to file in the federal court, but we need to get something filed with the VA pretty quick. So we're going to have somebody call you. We're going to get your name and number and have somebody call you.
I really appreciate that, sir.
You're welcome, Stephen. Thank you for your service to the country. And I tell you what, this is a very complicated matter. You're good that it's a good thing you're calling attorneys, because it involves a lot of things. But I'll go to law school and Steve's question just a little bit before we move on in the show. Federal Tort Claims Act. Remember, Brad and I told you that the government has absolute immunity. It's called governmental immunity. You can't sue the government. It came from our inheritance of the English common law, where you could not sue the king. That sounds stupid and silly, but that's where it came from. But the Federal Tort Claims Act, like the Colorado counterpart, is a partial waiver by the United States government of liability, of immunity. Therefore, you can maintain an action, but you have to jump through the right hoops, and you have to jump over the right hurdles. So we'll help you through and navigate that insurance mess and that maze. Is that okay, Steve?
Absolutely, sir. And I can't thank Cahal at your show for leading me in a direction.
Okay, we're going to put you on hold. You're going to Kevin your information, and you're going to hear from Bell and Pollock, all right?
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate all your calls. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, we're here to answer your questions on any legal subject. It's a law talk show. We're talking a lot with Bill now from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Bill.
Yeah, I've got a first question, and I got a follow-up, too, okay?
Okay, sure.
I had an accident where I had damage to the right front part of my car.
Right.
And I took the check and didn't get it repaired. Okay?
Okay.
Because I need the money, and it wasn't worth it, okay?
Right, okay.
In the meantime, if I have another accident to the same corner of the car, do they deduct what they already gave me the first time?
Probably will. They're going to do them. They're going to try and determine how much more damage the second accident caused and only pay you for the additional damage. They're not going to pay you for the original damage because you've already been compensated.
They do the same thing if I total the car?
Well, total the car is a little bit different, because total the car is going to be then the question is whether you take the car back for salvage value and get a salvage value title. At that point, basically, they are going to do the same thing, but if the car gets totaled again, then they're going to be
if I totaled it after the first accident.
Oh, if you totaled it after the first accident.
Yeah.
Well, did they total it and then give you a salvage value title?
No, this hadn't happened.
Okay, so they never totaled it. They just paid you for the...
If I have another accident, then I totaled it.
Oh. No, yeah, when they total a car, what they do is they try and give you the fair market value for the car as of the date that it was totaled. So, yes, they would try to determine the condition of the car. They'd put it in a condition, whether it was good, bad, fair, excellent condition. They take the condition of the car and determine what the value of the car is based on the condition of the car at the time that it was totaled.
Okay.
But
my other question.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I'm going to have a colonoscopy on Friday. What kind of question should I ask them?
Well, I mean, you should ask what the risks are for sure, okay, the colonoscopy, because...
They always give you a piece of paper that they want you to sign.
Yeah, you need to understand it, because I've seen doctors explain the risks very, very well and answer all the questions, and I've seen doctors explain risks like this. Well, you've got a nerve in that area. What does that mean? So you need to ask the questions about what are the risks, what do they mean, what are the chances... And that sort of thing. Explain this to me. They're probably not going to do the procedure unless you sign the consent form. But the point of the matter is you need to fully understand the risk, because they usually write in there, well, you know, you got the risk of death, you got the risk of infection, you got the risk of bleeding, you got the risk of this, you got a risk of a puncture, you got risk of this. And so, yeah, well, what is it, a 10% chance or a 90% chance? So you need to fully understand the situation.
But if you... don't sign it, you're not going to get the procedure.
Yeah, probably. No, they're not going to do it.
Well, a lot of things come up is whether or not the doctor is putting any special statements into the actual document itself. If it's just the written form, is boilerplate language. You're going to be held to that. But the question you've got to ask the doctor is, and see what the doctor does. If the doctor's identifying any special problems related to the procedure, okay?
Well, the other one I want to point out to you is, as I just said, you need to understand this fully, but you also need to understand there's usually a language in every release that says we, the doctor, the medical provider, can once we are into the procedure, we can, in our reasonable discretion and judgment, do any other procedure we deem necessary. You need to know what those are. You need to ask those questions. And you need to find out if in that consent form it has the language that says we can do anything we want to once we get inside and take a look and go from there. You need to understand. Right. Full disclosure is just like a real estate situation.
And I would not be giving the doctor permission to do a whole lot more than just the colonoscopy itself. If they find polyps there.
What do you do if it's in the form? Can you cross that off?
Yeah. As you're looking at it, make sure that he's got in there, that he's not going to be doing anything extra. Listen, let's talk to you.
Bill, if you want to talk further, give
the procedure.
Give us, Kevin, your information because we're up against the wall on time.
Okay, I'm good enough. That's very good.
Thank okay, you're welcome. Thanks for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Get any of our books free. You can download an ebook for free. You can get a free copy, a hard copy. And if you want my own personal declaration sheet and my own personal insurance policy, I'll be glad to give it to you. Bell and Pollock, because we are your champions of the people. Man, I never will forget the way the moonlight shined upon her head.